Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here are your hosts, Joe Kuzma and Brian E. Roach.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. My name is Joe Kuzma, and joined, as always, by my brother from another mother, the host who doesn't like toast, a one Mr. Brian E. Roach. What's going on, Brian?
I'm wondering if I should rethink my stance on toast, since I can't eat it anyway. Just go, I don't care about toast one way or the other, because I can't have it.
The host who doesn't care about toast.
There you go.
I don't know, man. Maybe your taste buds will change. I hear as you get older, that might be the case, but I'm not sure how much older you can get. But anyhow, had to throw it in there, right?
Yeah.
We got the Pittsburgh Steelers and the visiting Los Angeles Rams. Still trying to get used to that. Hopefully you don't call them the San Diego Rams. they are 5-3. They're coming to visit a Steelers team that just reached 500 for the first time this season, and I guess multiple times over Mike Tomlin's career, he's had some 4-4 teams, two of which have actually made the postseason, and the one that ended up missing out on that infamous, speaking of San Diego, that Chargers and Chiefs game when they were the 8-8 season ages ago, back when Shep was a pup. How about that cliche? So, Yeah, it feels like it anyways. So, especially when you look at the history, I'm going to bring this up right away, too, before I talk about our favorite subject. It's a little bit of history with all this NFL 100 stuff. There's a few, the Rams, that was kind of like a thing, that was, most people may have forgotten about this, even yourself as you get into age and lose your memory. The Super Bowl years, the Terry Bradshaw passes and everything like that. Super Bowl 14. And the little note here, it's actually a Steelers note. Once again, Pittsburgh defeated the Los Angeles Rams because they were the Los Angeles Rams back then, 31-19, as Terry Bradshaw, 73-yard touchdown pass, and Franco Harris with a rushing touchdown, both recorded those touchdowns in the fourth quarter, which I thought was pretty interesting. The Rams, an interesting little tidbit, the Rams lead the all-time series 15-8-2. So there's two ties in there. The Steelers have actually won the past three, including the last game, which was the miserable turf caught on fire in St. Louis. Ben Roethlisberger getting hurt, and that was Michael Vick versus Nick Foles, as that ended up with the Steelers barely winning that game, 12-6. What an ugly game that was, Brian. That was back in 2015. The last time the Rams have traveled to Pittsburgh was back in Christmas Eve, 2011, and I very much remember going with my one cousin Michael to this game. We went early. It was 1 o'clock, and then his mom is usually the one who has the Christmas Eve festivities, so we just went straight back there, and we weren't like late or anything, but everyone was still giving us some grief over it. It was like, come on, dinner is like at like 6:30 or something like that, so we had plenty of time. That was a 27-0 victory. I do believe that was the Charlie Batch came in and spelled Ben for a game. It was like the next to last game of the season, maybe. And I also want to say that was a game that Rashard Mendenhall got injured in. That was the downward spiral from there, I believe. So, there's some history. There's some memorable games, even though these teams don't play very often because being in the different conferences and divisions, there's just no overlap there. You don't see them as an NFC opponent very often. And the Rams, they're coming in, from the West Coast, but off of a bye week. So they didn't play last week, but they previously played against the Bengals in the UK. They played in London, so they faced Andy Dalton. Maybe they'll be the last team to have said that, Brian. But you know what? I mean, they have a bye. They've been up and down, and this should be an interesting opponent. I don't know that you can necessarily bank on the West Coast travel and everything. A 4:25 start in Pittsburgh. Steelers are definitely going to be, geeked up with the old throwbacks with the block numbers. So kind of going back to those old Super Bowls, against the Rams. The we'll see what ends up happening, how this new Los Angeles Rams team, and not St. Louis, not San Diego, Los Angeles Rams team fares this Sunday. I think it's going to be a competitive game, but not one that's unwinnable for the Steelers.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a tougher challenge than, say, last week's game will be. But it's still a very winnable game, I think. It all depends. You know, the Rams have been a very up-and-down team this year. You know, they still have a winning record. They've beaten some solid teams. They've struggled against some less than solid teams. So, you know, this is also the same team that had 55 dropped on them by the Buccaneers.
Yeah.
So it just kind of depends on which Rams team shows up. You know, if the right team is there, this is going to be a real challenge for the Steelers to pull the victory out. If the Rams are not playing at their top, hey, you know, and I know we're going to get into a lot of this as we go, but you know, they're still integrating their new cornerback, Jalen Ramsey from the Jaguars in, and that does add some more stability to that defense that had struggled when it was, you know, Marcus Peters and Talib, whatever his name was.
Talib, Abib,
whatever his name was. I don't care. He's not there anymore, so what difference does it make?
Pretty much.
Yeah, I will say this. I probably won't call them the San Diego Rams because I don't believe they've ever been the San Diego Rams. There's an outside chance I might have called them St. Louis, but they've been the L.A. Rams more so than anything else.
What about the Cleveland Rams?
No, I won't call them that either.
I wasn't sure how far back we could go. You know,
that's beyond me.
You're going to be calling me ageist pretty soon.
You are. You're an ageist bastard. It's clear to everyone you're an ageist bastard.
Oh, I just love to tease Brian. I mean, well, the Rams start the year, three victories against the Panthers, a very tight game, a three-point victory on the road in Carolina. That was back with, you know, week one where you don't know what's going on and Cam Newton was healthy. They got a New Orleans Saints team that ended up having to put Teddy Bridgewater in rather early in that game in week two. They struggled on the road against the Cleveland Browns. They struggled badly. And if it wasn't for the Browns being terrible then in their own right, they probably would have lost that game, maybe to a stronger opponent, which ends up happening. They lose at home to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. 55 dropped on them. I think that was part of the catalyst for Marcus Peters being shipped out of town. So their secondary, you know, you mentioned that, and I think that's going to be an interesting topic, but we'll get to that in a bit. You got the Seahawks, a one-point loss at Seattle on the road. They lost to the 49ers. So you see some common opponents that they lost to, and then they, you know, beat the snot out of the Atlanta Falcons, and they pretty much handled the Bengals. That game, it was a little bit tighter. I don't know if it was a little bit of, you know, the travel bug or whatever, going over to the United Kingdom, playing, you know, in Great Britain at Wembley Stadium. 83,000 people got to witness the Cincinnati Bengals go winless. But the game was a lot tighter, you know, than, you know, most people would have thought. As I was mentioning, you had a 3-0 first quarter. That's all the Rams could muster, 3-0. And I mean, the Bengals never led in this game, but this is a team that just benched Andy Dalton. And, you know, this halftime score was only 17-10. The Rams were only able to get 7 second half points. Yes, they won 24-10, but on, you know, you're just looking at that on paper. That's the Cincinnati Bengals, man. I mean, the Bengals are like 0-forever this year. They're not a good team whatsoever. Andy Dalton was sacked 5 times. I mean, they got to him, but by the same token, you have a Rams offense that wasn't able to muster much of anything, regardless of who they had in their backfield. So while they were getting in the Bengals' backfield, this is a Steelers team that, you know, if they got their stuff together and they're not feeling rusty over the bye week, I really do like the fortunes of the Steelers. I know, you know, I just said, hey, this is kind of a winnable game. But like I said, common opponents, you look, you know, there were tight games with the Rams, the same type of tight games the Steelers were in with common opponents in Seattle and San Francisco. And those are teams that the Rams are used to playing within their division. There's more familiarity than when the Steelers are going and playing those two teams. So I think in that, you know, type of aspect here, and you still have the Rams still going on the road. They still had to go from London back home even during a bye, and then back on the road again to the East Coast, basically, with Pittsburgh, at least Eastern time zone. I think some of these storylines, you know, could benefit the Steelers.
Absolutely. I personally, I love the fact that the London game is a home game for the Rams. You know, that makes me laugh. But, you know, a lot of this depends on the version of Jared Goff that decides to play. Jared Goff has been a turnover machine at times. And then, you know, against the Bengals, admittedly, this is against the Bengals. He had probably his best game, even though he was only able to get one touchdown pass. You know, he probably had his best game with a rating of, I think, like 121, actually two touchdown passes. You know, it just depends on whether that's the Jared Goff you get, or you get the Jared Goff who played against, you know, the
everyone else.
Everyone else, basically, yeah, who's going to throw picks. You know, the benefit of this is the defense continues to improve. The Steelers' defense, from that standpoint, continues to improve. Todd Gurley has not been Todd Gurley. He hasn't had a 100-yard game yet this year. He's not putting up big numbers. He seems to still be in the funk he was in the playoffs in the Super Bowl last year. Whether that's still injury-related, whether he has lost a step due to injury, I don't know. Whether it's their offensive line. I mean, I'll freely admit, I don't watch Rams games. And so I don't have a lot of firsthand experience looking at that film. But, you know, the numbers sort of speak for themselves. They can be made one-dimensional, and that dimension can be passing. And if they can do that, and then they can get to Goff and get him off his mark so that he doesn't feel comfortable, they are just like any other team. My bigger concern is not that the defense can't handle the Rams' offense. It's that our offense can't start with an interception on the first play the way they have the last two games, and they can't start slow. They need to come out and find some consistency. And Zach and I talked about this in the post game. That's the biggest problem that we both see with the offense right now, is that they don't seem to know who they are. And at some point, this offense has to find an identity and decide, what kind of team they're going to be, and then just execute that way. This would be an excellent chance for them to start to figure out who they are.
Yeah, and you know what? I think I'm going to split this up and talk about the Steelers' offense versus the Rams' defense, because I think that's more of a significant – it could be more of a significant storyline. I don't know, man. I mean, the Steelers are causing havoc. They're wrecking havoc. But can they consistently continue to make the splash plays on the defense that's holding up the offensive end? I think that's more of the concern when you're going into this game. I don't know, man. I was kind of like a coin flip on the Indianapolis Colts game in many ways, because I thought those teams mirrored each other pretty well between the Colts and Steelers. I kind of feel the same way right now with the Rams and the Steelers, because, you know, Jared Goff's still a young quarterback and, you know, prone to making some mistakes. He threw a lot of interceptions last year. He's thrown some already. This year he's at, I'm looking at it right here, seven picks. So he threw 12 last year, been through 16. Okay. And that was over the course of 16 games. So you got a guy that can be rattled, and, you know, their offensive line is usually pretty good, but they've really struggled in running the ball this year, like you said. And I think that's going to be an interesting storyline with the Steelers. You got Brandon Cooks, who's out. They have formidable receivers. Cooper Kupp is an unstoppable guy. He's one of my FCS guys. You know what I mean? Speaking of which, Kevin Rader back, you know, on the Steelers practice squad. I wanted to throw that out there, because that was the game where Cooper Kupp that's where I really got to know him. He played Eastern Washington, played Youngstown State. It was the FCS semifinals probably about 2-3 years ago. And it's like, this guy, you know, is being touted as this pro talent, right? And you're like, yeah, right, Eastern Washington or whatever. And, you know, another guy that came from there was Samson Ebukam, who we actually spoke to in the pre-draft process. I think you were the one who had the interview, actually.
I did.
Yeah, and, you know, he's on the other side of the ball. He's also on this Rams squad, too. So two Eastern Washington teammates there that are actually excelling quite well in the NFL. But, I mean, he's quite a handful. The Steelers secondary is going to have to prepare against Kupp. You got Robert Woods, who has had a ho-hum kind of season two, but he's certainly capable. But I think Cooks being out with the concussion protocol, or, you know, you would assume, I mean, he's seeing all kinds of specialists and stuff now. This is like a recurring thing, and he's been banged up, and he hasn't even being healthy, he hasn't had much of a season to begin with, but he's kind of a guy that for Steelers fans is kind of in the mold of a Martavis Bryant. So when he's available, he's a big, strong, fast guy that you have to respect, or else he could eat you alive. Usually it's the tight ends you worry about eating the Steelers alive, and when I look up and down the depth chart here, Tyler Higbee doesn't necessarily scare me. Gerald Everett is a guy that's capable of being a playmaker, but the way the Steelers basically shut down Eric Ebron and Jack Doyle, even though it didn't look like they were going to at first, you know, this has a lot of similarities here when it comes to game planning and what we could expect to maybe see the Steelers defense do. I don't expect to see Minkah Fitzpatrick run a 96-yard interception back for a touchdown, but they're certainly capable of getting their hands on some passes, batting some down, and as long as you don't have the officials throwing, you know, the flags directly at Steven Nelson for phantom whatever it is, what's it. I didn't get to do the post-game, Brian, so I need to vent about that. The pass interference calls, as long as the Steelers don't put themselves in a position where the referees can dictate the game, basically the difference of the outcome with the Indianapolis Colts game last week was it was almost the same thing as when they played the Seahawks. You had a call, or the Ravens, you had a questionable, controversial call that allowed the opponent to continue a drive, maintain possession, and score, and that score pretty much dictated the victories for the Seahawks and for the Ravens, whereas Vinatieri, they had the botched field goal, and it didn't end up that way, but it should have never ended up that way. Ditto for Deontay Johnson being called for a pass interference call, offensive pass interference call, at the end of the first half of that game. So you got to have the Steelers' defense in such a position that they got to get off the field on third downs. That still appears to be a problem sometimes. This happens all across the league. You can watch every single game. There's always some type of flag or there's something. The Steelers benefit from it too. But I mean, just very egregious phantom calls here that you're just like, what did this guy do that now this is going to maybe dictate the outcome of the game? The Steelers have to dictate the outcome of the game. And I think the defense definitely has to do their job again, because if they find themselves behind, like you said, they find themselves behind early, I'm not as confident here, you know, and we'll get to the offense here in a second, but I'm not as confident that they're going to be able to just pull it out or get that big turnover that's going to put points on the board or set the offense up with a very short field and get the job done this time around.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think Brandon Cooks, like I think you said this, I can't remember now, has officially been ruled out. So they Quite don't possible. Have to deal with him. I think I read a story where he is still in the concussion protocol, yes, and he's been ruled out as of this game.
Well, he was actually going to Pittsburgh to see like some type of neuro, whatever they call it.
Yeah. So I don't think they're going to have to worry about him, which means they have Mike Thomas. They have Cooper Kupp, as you said, JoJo Natson. Yeah, I'm terrified. and Robert Woods and Josh Reynolds.
Hey, I liked Josh Reynolds during the draft process. You know, it's one of those mid-round guys that if the Steelers had him, I'd probably like him, you know?
Yeah. It is certainly helpful. I think that they do have to pay attention to Cooper Kupp. Goff has had some synchronicity with him. There you go. Nice word. And allowed him to, have a great game against the Bengals, something like 220 yards, something ridiculous like that. There isn't a lot about this offense that terrifies you. What's really more, as from an individual player standpoint, that is, but what's really more concerning is the way they use movement, the way they use misdirection, and the defense has to play solid. They have to have gap integrity. They have to, play the scheme that they're supposed to play. In other words, a statement that we hear oftentimes, they just have to do their jobs. If everybody does their job, I think the defense can handle the Rams offense. Doesn't mean they're going to hold, but it does mean I think that they can give the offense the opportunity to win the game. I'm much less concerned unless they spend the entire first half on the field. If it's the same old story that it was in the first four games, where the offense isn't putting together some consistent drives, which luckily hasn't been nearly as obvious in these last set of games that they've won, the defense can stay fresh, and we look at potentially the defense being able to play full games at a better pace. But if they're forced to be on the field, then all bets are kind of off because they're going to wear down. But I guess I'm less concerned about that occurring, less concerned about the defense's ability to handle the Rams' offense as opposed to the flip side of the ball. And it's not that the Rams' offense, as you said, it's not that the Rams' offense is bad per se. I mean, they've scored, 24, 37, 29, 40. So it's not like they aren't putting up points at times. But, they did only manage 7 points against the 49ers. They only put up 24 on the Bengals, I guess, if you want to say only. I mean, but it's the Bengals.
Exactly.
And as you said, they put up 20 points only on the Browns. Again, a team that is not really performing to where people thought they were going to perform.
Yeah.
Except maybe you.
I'm the only one, and I caught so much grief over it too, which is just, I'm not going to say I'm vindicated yet. We're at the midway point, and they have a very weak schedule still going forward. So I'm still going to reserve my ha-ha Nelson from The Simpsons until we get to like week 17, and then I'm going to be all over that like a fly on you-know-what.
Oh, absolutely. But, I guess my point was still directly that the offense is my bigger concern. The defense, I think, will be able to keep the Steelers in this game.
Yeah, and, before I jump over to anything else here with the offense, I'm going to mention that the Steel City Underground podcast is brought to you by the FanDuel Sportsbook. And the line on this game, Brian, is Steelers are they're 3.5 point underdogs in this one. So I don't know. It's kind of weird. It's usually the line that you would get with the home team. And I'm just trying to figure this out because the Rams, you're basically a game off from having the same record as the Steelers. I see the common opponents. I see the Rams beating up on some bad teams. They got the win against the Saints, against Teddy Bridgewater, who came in kind of cold off the bench too, very much in the way that Mason Rudolph did, except with a lot more NFL starting experience. And I just look at these kind of things here, and I'm trying to figure this out because, you got the team that's coming over with all the travel and everything we said. We're going to mention some other things, offense, defense. I get that the Rams were in the Super Bowl last year, but they're, for all intents and purposes, it's not the same exact team that got there. And they weren't able to score points when they got there either. So they've been kind of on a slide since the Super Bowl. And, that's probably something that we're going to hear for those of you who watch it on TV. What is it? The 4:25 kickoff on Fox for the doubleheader on Sunday. That's what you're going to see. But anyways, I digress. The FanDuel Sportsbook, if you're interested in putting some money on this game, and I got some interesting game props here off of their website that I'm going to mention in a minute, that you could, you could go ahead and place up to a $500 risk-free bet for anyone that's a new user, if that includes you. And, that's just the beginning because there's lots of other promotions that are going on all the time. You can find odds boosts, bet insurance, special bonuses, and more. Their cash-out feature makes it very easy to take your winnings and take them early. And as the game goes on, you can get updated offers to cash out your bet before the game even ends. I mean, this thing, when you're dealing with this sports betting online, there's all kinds of crazy stuff that you could do now, on a whim, just playing around with the app. Now, I do have to mention that if you go and you download the app and it's available, for your more popular iPhones and Android phones, you do have the little geolocation thing. You're going to have to be in New Jersey or Pennsylvania. I believe that's also being extended. You're going to want to check out the website, which is sportsbook.fanduel.com, but that is being extended now into other states. So you're going to want to keep an eye on that and see if you're eligible. But for those of you who are already in New Jersey or Pennsylvania, you're coming in to watch the game in Pittsburgh, this is a great deal for you, especially if you use the promo code SCU and you make that first bet after signing up within the first 7 days. If you lose, FanDuel Sportsbook will give you a refund and site credit of up to that $500 smackaroos. So be sure to go and visit sportsbook.fanduel.com and check out that app. I also want to mention the disclaimer here before we get into some of the other prop bets that are here on the FanDuel Sportsbook. It's for your first online wager only. Refund issued as a site credit. Site credit expires after 14 days. You need to go to sportsbook.fanduel.com for full terms, full details. You must be 21 or older. That's also important. And you must be present in those states where it's legal, such as New Jersey and Pennsylvania, in order to play. And if you have a gambling problem, please, please call 1-800-GAMBLER. Now, here, I like some of these ones here that they have because they have, you know, team to score first. You have winning margins. You have halftime results. You have a race to 5, race to 10, race to 15, race to 20, race to 25, and race to 30. And, yeah. I mean, you know, if you think the Steelers can get 30 points on the Rams, you know, that's going to lay out some decent cashola for you. So, that you know, you go and you place, let's say, you know, $10 bet, you're going to get $7. If you get a $100 bet, you're going to get 170 off of that. I don't know that I'm feeling that bullish on the Steelers' offense. But, I mean, it's not just the offense. I mean, if you think you're going to get some defensive points, you think TJ Watt could get, like, a strip sack and a safety or Big Bud. Man, I'm chewing at the bit here. We're gonna have a short turnaround this week, Brian, with Thursday Night Football. You know, and then after that, I think I'm gonna finally pull out the Bud Dupree piece because the things that I said them during the summer. Some of our newer listeners and subscribers out there may not have heard about it, but there are a lot of well-known brand names, not only in the Steelers franchise but in the NFL, that really didn't blossom until like their fourth or fifth season in the league. A big surprise one would be a very famous guy who's also known for other stuff now in the entertainment field, and that's Michael Strahan. So look up some of those stats. We'll see if Dupree keeps it going. That's another one where I'm kind of like with you know, making fun of the Cleveland Browns and their record right now. I'm being a little like hesitant to just jump on the train just yet. I got to see a little bit more. See a little bit more. I get in December, then I'm gonna be beating the drum and driving around like the old election vehicles or whatever with the bullhorns on them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just, you know, shouting it from the mountains. So, but yeah, that pretty much that does a wrap there. If you're interested, check out the FanDuel Sportsbook over at sportsbook.fanduel.com, and that promo code once again is SCU for Steel City Underground. Now we get to jump to the Steelers offense. You know, Mason Rudolph looking a little stronger. I don't think that obviously that interception wasn't his fault last week, but you can't have those kind of the turnovers are even worse because in every case the Steelers have pretty much turned the ball over this year, it's been giving the opponent a short field and darn their automatic points. So I think, you know, that's one thing that you hit the nail on the head there with. At the very least, you know, if they throw a deep pass and it's like, you know, one of Minka getting that one and it's down at like the 2 or 3 yard line and it's basically like a punt, okay, I can maybe live with that a little more than, you know, you fumble inside your own within your own 20, like at the 15 or something. And even the field goal attempt, if you do hold them to only, you know, a fourth down field goal try, it's shorter than the point after attempt anymore. So this is just one of these things where, you know, you can't shoot yourself in the foot here. Hopefully there's no penalties. I thought the Steelers played a pretty clean game penalty-wise last week. I don't remember anything that was really self-defeating in most cases. You know, usually you get a holding call here or there, momentum killers and things of that nature. I think the ones that were called were pretty much BS. As we always say, the refs stink. So I think the biggest storyline going into this is the injuries that the Steelers have, particularly at the running back position. It's going to be interesting to see because, I mean, even Trey Edmonds, who kind of rose to the occasion there, showed up on the injury report now with ribs and didn't practice with banged up ribs and didn't practice.
Yeah, you know, you talked about Mason Rudolph, and you know, here's a guy whose season, you know, he's had ratings of 124.6. That's his high against the Bengals. He had 100.2 rating against the Ravens, admittedly, in limited play since that's the game he got knocked out. 84.4 against the Dolphins, 84.3 against the Colts. You know, he's thrown picks the last two games.
Is that his lowest? Is 84.3 his lowest?
No, against the 49ers, he was 81.4.
Okay, I was going to say, because 84.3, you got Goff with at least four games lower than that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the concern remains with Mason Rudolph is whether he is gun-shy, whether it's, you know, This is the big unanswered question, the mystery of the ages, so to speak. Is it that Mason Rudolph is afraid to try and force the ball into the windows that are going to be there in the NFL, these tight, limited windows, whether he is, you know, gets gun shy because he throws a pick early in the game and then doesn't want to try and force the ball into those windows, or whether they're not calling plays that are designed for that? Now, you know, there's several different plays that when you go back and look at the All-22 in that Colts game, where he had Juju open for what looked like would have been a touchdown. He had Deontay Johnson open for what would have been a touchdown. You know, guys who probably could have either walked into the end zone because they were either wide open, or with Juju, the play that I'm referring to was a limited window, but it's a window that a NFL caliber quarterback would take and hit. And with Juju's ability to break tackles and his toughness, maybe he scores, but it certainly could have been a first down. There are opportunities that are there that Mason is either missing and not seeing, or has been hesitant to take. And that has to change one way or the other. The Steelers cannot live on checkdowns. At the point where the Colts has figured it out, you know, in that game, it just stopped working and the offense stalled in the second half. So, you know, that's Mason. Mason's got to be willing to take some chances. But, I mean, you know, I've said this a lot. I don't dislike Mason Rudolph, but I have concerns because, you know, one of James Washington's catches was an absolutely amazing, fantastic catch because the ball is 4 feet behind him.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, these crossing routes in the middle, Mason seems to be off target quite often. And so I don't know what the answers are there yet. He does not have the arm that he can do Aaron Rodgers types things and just throw off of his back foot. He needs to plant. He needs to be able to set and have good mechanics. But I think he's a better quarterback than what we've seen. So I don't know whether it's in his head. I don't know whether it's in his mechanics or whether it's just a hesitancy, but that's going to have to change. This is not a game that he's going to be able to dink and dunk the Rams to get enough points to win this game. And if James Conner, I don't know, I didn't look at the injury report yesterday, but I'm assuming that Conner was limited.
Yes, limited.
So, I mean, if he can come back and do full participation at some point so that he's available, that will be a big benefit. Jalen Samuels was not impressive as a running back in the game against the Colts, did a nice job doing checkdowns, caught everything that was thrown to him. But they need to be able to both run the ball and have that threat. So if James Conner's back, I think that will help a lot. And having the tandem of Conner's and Samuels will help because it provides that dual threat of both running and a guy who can catch the ball out of the backfield. And James Conner's done a fine job of that as well. But this disconnect with his wide receivers, somehow that's got to change. When you go back and you look at the All-22 tape so that you get a better sense, and you probably can see it in stadium as well, you know, it's in some cases, yes, it's definitely that there's nobody open, but in other cases, the windows are there and he's just not throwing the ball.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of the timing is still coming to him. I don't necessarily know that. I wouldn't say it's terrible by any means. There's disappointing times. I mean, do we remember, like, this is the reason why this all bothers me. You got some narratives. You said the dink and dunk, okay? He attempted, Rudolph did, 35 passes, okay, on the last game against the Colts. 26 of 35, of course. But he threw 7 of those beyond 10 yards downfield. One of them was the tipped Juju interception. The one was, I believe, the big James Washington one. And then the other one, one of the ones that was deep there, was the BS, I'm going to say, so I don't swear, Deontay Johnson offensive pass interference, which you've now seen 2 weeks in a row where he's been called for this, and it's just complete garbage. And eventually they're just going to connect on this and maybe don't have a flag thrown on it, and we can get rid of some of this, you know, debate as to whether or not he throws downfield or he connects with some of these guys. I know what you mean. Vance McDonald had a catch that was very much like that too, a one-handed snag. But Ben, there's times where we were all over Ben Roethlisberger about this too, being out of sync, missing Antonio Brown downfield. Ben, what are you doing? Nearly killed I think he did kill Justin Hunter. Is Justin Hunter anywhere in the league right now? Justin Hunter laid out for that one ball, separated his shoulder or whatever, and went on IR. I mean, that was just last season. So, I mean, I think these same things are just happening. You know, I think it's just part of the game. I think, obviously, when you watch some guys like Aaron Rodgers, they're usually always sharp. Tom Brady and company, they were not sharp against the Ravens whatsoever. I don't know what was going on with that team. Offensively or defensively, they didn't look that one drive they did. But I will say overall, you know, I think you just have some of these games where you're getting you're feeling things out. I don't think Rudolph has the experience yet to just whether you know this is consistent or not. That could have been a great game for him last week. He could completely stink this week. We don't know that yet. I'm willing to accept that. You have the other deal too, like you said, with Jalen Samuels. There are times where Jalen Samuels, he just has a nose for the end zone. I do believe that he was in on that one play with the Colts, or it was very close where he stretched out and they marked him short. And then you have Trey Edmonds, who didn't really have an opportunity to follow his blockers and lost yards at the goal line there too. And those are the type of things that are still out of sync. I think Mike Tomlin was just asked about that in his presser the other day about being, you know, a top or the top red zone offense just a year earlier. And, you know, I think his reply exactly was, well, you know, it's kind of like the Avengers. We have a Hulk, he had a Ben. So
yeah,
it was one of those things. But I know what you mean with Rudolph. It seems like obviously the safety was him not getting rid of the ball. He gets sacked, he gets brought down for a safety. He had an opportunity to just throw it to the sidelines, Andy Dalton the thing. And he didn't do it, and he's trying to make some plays happen. We've seen him hold on to the ball. We've seen it in training camp too. Was it something that really stuck out like a sore thumb? At times, I mean, that's the reason I think Josh Dobbs was traded, was because he was holding on to it way too long. He was seeing nothing. Rudolph sees things sometimes. Sometimes I guess he's seeing ghosts. We see other times where he's going through his progressions. I want to say the touchdown pass that he had was one of those. I think they even called it out one of the replays on TV, if my memory serves me correctly. So I don't want to necessarily, you know, just pile on him, but it will be significantly more difficult if you only have Jalen Samuels as your primary back, because I am going to say that using him 100% of the time to run the football, I don't think that's his skill set. I don't think that's what suits him. I don't think he's a guy who, maybe he can get in a rhythm and do that, but I think he's best suited to change of pace. I think he's best suited to, let's line him up in the slot like they used to do with Le'Veon Bell. I think he's actually fabulous in that role, to be completely honest. I think that's something that the Steelers were largely missing last season sometimes, although Connor was effective as a pass catcher too, and when we see them both in tandem like we did before Connor got hurt, that really behooves the Steelers offense, their ability to move downfield. I really think, Brian, and when you boil this down in a nutshell here, you have, let's think about all the guys that have been in and out of this depth chart through eight games, if you will. Ben Roethlisberger, what, game and a half? Mason Rudolph comes in, and then all of a sudden he's out part of the Ravens game. Duck Hodges plays like half of that and the next game. Then you have a bye. Now you had Mason play two games. You start to mix and match some of that. Deontay Johnson's a rookie. He didn't really start out at the beginning of the season. Dante Moncrief was in there, and c'est la vie to Dante Moncrief now. He's not even on the roster. You're still working James Washington in here or there. Juju Smith-Schuster has not been able to do much of anything, and they're, you know, basically the coaches are saying that's not because of his effort, basically what they're getting from the defenses, which, you know, he's going to get Jalen Ramsey and probably some dose of Eric Weddle this weekend, so it may not be any prettier there. I think the picture I'm trying to paint here is, along with Vance McDonald getting hurt, and then they also had to trade and get Nick Vinette because Xavier Grimble was in there too. They tried Zach Gentry in there at the tight end position. You get the revolving door with Connor in and out, hurt, Jalen Samuels, Benny Snell, then Trey Edmonds, and then this other guy who has like a law firm type name that just came over from Oregon. There's just so many things that are erratic that I just mentioned rhythm. It doesn't seem like they're able to get any kind of rhythm because everything is different from week to week to week to week. There's no consistency in who's playing, who you're throwing the ball to, who you're handing the ball off to. You got Ramon Foster in concussion protocol, so even the line is a little in flux, even though I think BJ Finney is more than capable to be an NFL starter for the Steelers or elsewhere. But I think that's part of the problem here, and it doesn't really help a guy that's a second-year quarterback that's, you know, played a handful of games so far in his career, not only confidence-wise, but just getting his timing and everything else down. If you happen to remember, before you know, I run out of breath here, if you happen to remember, this was the same thing that was said by Tommy Maddox when Ben Roethlisberger took over the whole offense. Tommy Maddox went to go in for a game or whatever, and Tommy Maddox said everything was all out of sync because it was different timing, different rhythm, et cetera, with the way he handled the quarterback position as opposed to the way Ben Roethlisberger did. So you got all kind of things happening there when you have three different quarterbacks playing for the Steelers this season as well.
Yeah, I'm less inclined to buy the timing issues at this point in the season, halfway through, because Mason, I admit, you know, he got knocked on his keister, was out for a game and the better part of a second game, but primarily over the season, he's taken the number one starts, you know, since really probably week two. He's been the guy to get those reps, and the wide receiver core, other than Dante Moncrief, hasn't changed that much. But I will grant you that he has been in and out of the lineup because of that concussion. And maybe that's part of the issue. But again, we need to see improvement. Everybody says it every week. There are people who are Mason Rudolph truthers who believe he's the future. There are people who are Mason Rudolph falsers. Is that, if you're not a truther, are you a falser?
They're haters.
Yenzers. I'm neither of those. I'm a guy that says, look, I see some things I like. I see some things I don't. I don't know if he's the future yet or not. I certainly am willing to say he is a consistently solid backup who could play that position for his entire career and maybe more, but I don't know that yet. So I think what we really need to see out of Mason is some growth, and some arrow pointing upward, as opposed to the arrow being sort of in the same place every week. And we'll see how that goes. 'Cause that's the way I view the last 2 weeks, is basically the same performance.
I think the Browns fans are going to disagree with you here, and some of the comments from, you know, having, you know, half and half in family and friends being either Steelers or Browns fans. One of the comments last week that surfaced, that you're going to love this: the Steelers have a better record than we do with Mason freaking Rudolph. Why didn't we just draft that guy instead of Baker Mayfield?
Look, I've said all along, Baker Mayfield isn't a franchise quarterback. I said it on the day of the draft, on our draft show. I said, I think that's a mistake. He ain't the right guy. so I will own that wrong, in which case I'll say I was wrong. I ain't wrong yet.
No, you haven't been proven wrong just yet. And, you know, we would be remiss to not mention some of the Rams defense too, that the Steelers offense is going to be up against. The Steelers have played some really good, like, do we want to even use the word great, maybe, as far as defenses? I mean, the Patriots. Obviously,
49ers.
Obviously, Mason Rudolph, yes, 49ers, Seahawks. Mason Rudolph hasn't faced, you know, he didn't face the Patriots. He got to see the Seahawks just, you know, for about a half. And, you know, the Bengals, no. The Ravens, maybe. They send the kitchen sink on, like, every down, practically. The Chargers, you know, that was Duck Hodges' deal, and I'm not really sure what's going on with that team. They're kind of erratic. I wouldn't say that the Dolphins were necessarily a good defense, but I'm going to say the Colts are a good, a solid squad, too.
Solid squad, yeah.
So, I mean, they've been looking at some good defenses. If they could, you know, if they could get the job done here against the Rams, and, I mean, it's a tall order whenever you're talking about Aaron Donald, Clay Matthews had been coming on pretty strong and broke his jaw, and it looks like he may be back for this game. They added Jalen Ramsey. They added Eric Weddle in the offseason. So they got rid of Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib. Well, he's, you know, shipped out now too, but he was, for all intents and purposes, he's not going to play. He's on IR. So, Dante Fowler, of course, too. So you got, you know, these pass rushers. You got a defensive end in Michael Brockers. I mean, they got some guys, man. I mean, some really solid guys there. And we talked about Ebukam. He'll come in there every now and then too. This is a pretty formidable defense, but I don't want to say that necessarily the secondary is so stacked that they won't be able to do anything against them. I get that Nickel Ruby Coleman's, you know, running around out there. I'd give a lot of nods, with the exception of maybe Ramsey. I mean, I think Ramsey's got to be considered, like, what, top five corner in the league. I think Eric Weddle is a very kind of street smart type of a very aware player, even if his physical attributes aren't, you know, necessarily in his prime. He's still a guy that can read something and make something happen. But I want to say at least the Steelers secondary overall, I would believe, is a much stronger foe to the Rams offense than the Rams secondary be to the Steelers offense, at least in that regard. But it's those, you know, it's the guys up front, those horses, man. They'll have to contain them. At least you feel that the Steelers' offensive line doesn't, you know, have a brain fart to start the game as well, and they keep Mason Rudolph upright, give him some time. They're going to be capable. At least they're not coming off the bye. You know, I tend to think that the Rams are a team here, too, that, you know, everybody talks about Sean McVay and they got this and that with him. For how erratic the team has been, and when it comes to whatever adjustments they have and haven't been able to make in-game, I don't necessarily know we're going to see a very sharp Rams team come right on the field out of a bye week, where you got the Steelers have been playing through. This is their third game at home. They haven't been traveling anywhere. They have absolutely no baggage. And as long as, you know, you got most of your team healthy, with one other problem, Brian, in stopping Aaron Donald. I almost forgot to mention Rosie Nix showing up again with the knee. Not necessarily a good thing for the Steelers offense if he isn't able to play. But I tend to think here that, you know, we talk about Vegas being, or the line, or the FanDuel Sportsbook, or whoever's putting these odds out there, and everything being so close. It's scary how close they get some of these things. And 3.5, that might be another one of these games where you're looking at something very tight, because I still haven't seen a Steelers offense that's super explosive. And I've seen a Rams offense that struggled too. This could be very much a defensive battle. And the Rams, they have great specialists too. Johnny Hecker, Greg Zuerlein, their place kicker. That this could be back and forth, and maybe this is a Chris Boswell day too. You never know.
Yeah, it very well could be. You know, I don't think you can understate the Aaron Donald factor here. I mean, you know, that's Aaron Donald is maybe a he's a generational player.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, it's the Steelers are not going to be able to manage Aaron Donald with one guy. So it's going to be a two-man job. And whether that's Marquise Pouncey and B.J. Finney, whether that's Pouncey and DeCastro, I don't know. But that means the rest of the line is probably going to have to handle their guys one-on-one. There's not going to be a lot of additional help, because you simply have to account for Aaron Donald. So Their ability, you know, and the line has had issues this year. The line has not been the line that we're used to. And, you know, I read something about this, and I think this is true, is that this, because of the way this team has been set up under Ben Roethlisberger, this is a line that excels at pass blocking and is not as good at run blocking as we like to think. And I think that's been borne out to a certain extent. Where they've had challenges in the run game. So I can see them still having a tough time getting the offense going because of some of the players that you mentioned, especially Aaron Donald. And I would imagine that Mason Rudolph is going to avoid throwing at Jalen Ramsey most of the game.
Possibly. I mean,
we'll see.
We'll see how many fights he gets in or starts.
True, good point. right now he's probably on best behavior, because he got what he wanted. He pulled his in Antonio Brown Let me out of Jacksonville thing.
Bad timing on mentioning that guy's name.
Yeah, I know. I mean, he hasn't gone over the it's unfair other than the comparison of let me out of the Raiders world. Please free me. Oh, I'm free. I'm free.
That's good.
The rest of it after that is because something else happened. I think he walked into an I-beam. I don't know. But you know, he did. He pulled his little magic trick and got out of Jacksonville. And Jacksonville, you know, got a whole hell of a lot for him. So, you know, I think he's probably on best behavior, but, you know, he's volatile. You never know. Somebody could get him riled up and he could act out. But I expect he'll probably play, you know, the way that he normally plays. He's a top corner in the league. And so that they have challenges to overcome. But the funny thing about this Rams defense, when you start with a guy called Aaron Donald, and you've got, you know, the Marcus Peters and the Aqib Talibs and the Jalen Ramsey type people in there, this defense has underperformed in my mind almost every year. It has never been. I mean, they had Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh last year. In the same defensive line, admittedly, it's an older, fatter Ndamukong Suh. And I can say that because he's not going to come step on my ankle. you know, but he was a talented player, and they've still never lived up to that. This is going to be one of the all-time great defenses that there ever was. They have stretches where they look good, and then they look abysmal. Again, I keep going back to 55 points by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, their points scored is eighth. I mean, Cooper Kupp has been fantastic with them. They're right in the middle of the pack with points allowed at 15, which the Steelers are at 13, okay? They're in the middle of the pack at 17 with a flat zero, not a plus or a minus. They are zero with the takeaway differential, so they've given it up as much as they've been able to take it away, which, you know, isn't very much. It's 12 and 12. The Steelers are plus 11 on 22 and 11 when it comes to the takeaways, 22 takeaways and 11 giveaways. So even where the Steelers have had really, you know, kind of bite them in the rear end at the end of games or whatever, the Steelers have been excellent at the turnover differential. Now, the bigger thing is here is that the Rams have had the passing game. They've been primarily all pass. They're like fifth in passing yards. But you look at the teams that they played and the way they stacked some of those points up. Steelers are 27th. They're 26th in the run, where the Rams are 20th. They shouldn't be there. They have like a pretty decent offensive line as well. And they have Todd Gurley, who, you know, got paid. Le'Veon Bell was looking for the same kind of payday. He's like, hey, that's what I want, you know. Defensively, Brian, just to support what you're saying with the passing yards, they're 19th against the pass. The Steelers are 10th against the pass. And what world are we living in today? And, you know, they're 10th against the run, and the Steelers are 16th against the run. The Rams are going to have to run the football in order to win. The Steelers are going to have to pass the football in order to win. I think that's the way we broke it down, right? Couldn't have worked out any better than that.
That's pretty much right. You know, they have to be balanced to a certain extent. It doesn't mean that they have to be 50-50. The Steelers are going to have to throw the ball to win this game, but they need to be able to at least keep the Rams defense somewhat honest so that the offense isn't one-dimensional. And you know, use the running game at the appropriate times. But yeah, it does kind of fit into where we are. And you know, hopefully, look, as I said, the Buccaneers dropped 55 on them at home. You know, that's ugly from the Rams standpoint. There hasn't been another lapse that bad by this defense. But, you know, they can be had, even with Jalen Ramsey, even with Aaron Donald, even with, you know, the outside linebackers, Fowler and whatever his name is, Clay Matthews. Feels like Clay Matthews is 10,000 years old. How is he still playing?
That's an interesting thing because, I mean, he played in – did he not play in the Super Bowl against the Steelers with the Packers?
Yeah.
I mean, let me see. I'm going to look him up. He's 33, man. He's 33. I mean, I guess linebackers, they play a little – I mean, his old man played for a long time too, didn't he?
Yeah.
He's one of the guys I think we brought up when we were talking about how long James Harrison had been playing. I want to say that Clay Matthews played till he was like the senior or the second or junior or whatever he was. His pops is actually junior. I wasn't even aware of that, to be completely honest. I thought, you know, they just didn't put that on the back of their jerseys like some players. But anyways, the old man, I think, played until he was like 38 as well. I mean, he's been around for a minute, you know, and I think maybe he's going to do the same exact thing as his pops. So I don't know, man. I'm looking at this and it's like, you know, we can go back and forth on what needs to be done for the Steelers to win. You know, it would be nice for a nice little statement game for a change when it comes to this, because when I watched them go to Cleveland, they stunk. I mean, they were just bad. And, you know, I don't say that very often, but it's just one of those things where if the Cleveland Browns had any semblance of anything going in their favor, then they would have been able to win that game. This is the first half scoring from that game, by the way. Greg Zuerlein hits a 53-yard field goal to go up. So the Rams go up 3-0. And then you have the Browns with the Austin Siebert, 23 and 35-yard field goals. It was a 6-3 half. Cooper Kupp got a nice little pass. They go up 10-6, the Rams do. The Browns go back up 13-10, Cooper Kupp. They score, so they score the last point, so they score in the fourth quarter twice, a touchdown to go up 17-13, and then the insurance policy was the field goal to go up 20-13. And I look at this being in much the same way, that the Steelers should be able to eke out a victory there. I also have to mention that one of their inside linebackers, Hager, is also on the injury report too, so that may make the middle of the field advantageous for Mason Rudolph. Maybe you get this. I don't mind the little wheel routes. I don't mind the tight end, finding your tight end outlets and stuff like that. I think that could still be a winning game plan. I think somebody like Vance McDonald or Nick Vinette, you get them involved, I think they're grown-ass men enough to run over guys like Jalen Ramsey, maybe even Eric Weddle. That's the way I look at it. I am still looking for a Steelers win here. We said that they had to do what? They had to win two of the three home games in order to still be in this. Well, I think we were also counting on the Ravens maybe losing a couple of games that they didn't. And yeah. So in order to keep pace, what was it? You always get that Cynthia Freeland that always has like the what is it, the probability models and things of that nature. And I think they had the Steelers at what, like seventh right now? If it were, they would be right outside the playoffs. So is that
right?
I read that correctly. So
yes, you did.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is something where I had been saying, 4-4, hey, they could afford to do whatever right here, but they really can't, because if they drop this one, I mean, they definitely then they have no margin for error playing Cleveland twice and the Bengals within the next three games. Then they get the Cardinals, Bills, Jets, and then maybe a very big game with the Ravens in Baltimore, which is a very tough place to play, as we saw with the Patriots. So they need to pull this one out. I can't say much else, because if they don't win this game, I can't say that they're still, potentially a playoff team. They'd be sitting at 4-5, and they could really only drop maybe a game, one more game, then it would be 10-6 if they won out.
They can lose, I think, one and maybe two games the rest of the season and still have a shot. We said it when we reviewed the schedule. I'll say it again. I think that game at the end of the year in Baltimore is likely to be the division. That's just the way I see it. And unless, look, the Patriots stunk the joint up and looked like they had no idea how to defend Lamar Jackson. And were not at all – talk about a team that didn't look prepared.
Yeah.
Hey, the mighty Bill Belichick had a team that looked completely unprepared for that game. So whether it's because he just didn't care, And his mindset is, I'm going to use this game as a learning experience, and if we face them, I'll have a better idea of what to do. I don't know. He is an evil genius. So I have no idea what his thoughts are, but they certainly did not come out looking like the number one off or defense in the league against the Ravens. We played the Ravens better than the Patriots did. By far, and should have won the game. I still think that's what it's going to come down to. The Patriots still are not the Patriots. The Ravens still have some tough games. They've got to go to San Francisco. They have San Francisco at home. Isn't that right?
I'm not aware. I don't have it right in front of me, quite frankly.
Yeah, I mean, they still have San Francisco on their schedule. I think San Francisco is a game that they have at home. I'm trying to look it up as we're talking.
Yes.
But they have to go to the Rams. And you know, they've got other games on their schedule that are losable games.
The Jets.
Not to mention, you know, they're not going to lose to the Jets. Unless, you know, hey, the Jets beat the Cowboys and surprised everyone. Hey, so maybe it's one of those kind of games.
That's a Despicable Me, like the meme where Gru's holding the board and he looks at it and then he says something like, and then go and lose to the Jets.
Yes, and then go and lose to the Jets.
And then he just stares at it. And all the kids laugh.
So I don't know. But, you know, at this point, you know, they need the Ravens to end up around, you know, to be at 10-6 at the end of the season, and them to be at 10-6 at the end of the season and beat the Ravens in the last game. That's the way I see that their division could happen. Look, if they can win out, which I think is a pipe dream. They're going to lose a game someplace along the lines, probably. I think it's unrealistic to expect them to win out. Doesn't mean that it couldn't happen, just means I think it's unrealistic. Then, you know, if they only lose one more game, what's that? That's 11-5.
Yeah.
They're probably a wild card. You know, they lose two games and they may be on the outside looking in. Yep. They lose three games, forget it.
We could at least say Tomlin didn't have a losing record.
Yeah, that's what we'll be. We'll be in the exact same position last year, not in the playoffs, but we don't have a losing record.
Yep.
And look, let's be honest. With the way this season has gone, that's not necessarily the worst outcome in the world.
No,
it's not. You know, it is what it is, and we'll just have to see. The good news for I think all Steelers fans is there is not a game for the rest of this season that is unwinnable for this team. You know, they could win every game they have the rest of the year. They should be competitive every game they have the rest of the year. The bad news is there may be a lot of games like last week where we all are drenched in sweat by the end.
Well, are you kidding me? That's been every game for like the last 5 years, man. There's very few and far in between, like where the Thursday night where they beat the snot out of the Panthers or anything like that that's happened, you know. I guess, you know, they pummeled like the Colts once or twice, but I'm talking about like real recent. It all seems like nail biters. Last year definitely was like that. Everything was close, and you see what happens when you lose close games. You end up in a situation where, just, you know, last year and this year so far, you're on the outside. You're being talked about as the outsider looking in, and we're going to see how this pans out. But until then, Brian, you know, thanks for joining me once again. I think we'll have a post game for sure. I don't know if I'll be joining you or not, and then we'll be boomeranging right back around to a quick pregame for that Thursday night game in Cleveland that I was already mentioning was setting them up for failure by having to go on the road and go play away. But we'll talk about that more later. Thanks for joining me once again.
Always a pleasure to spend some time with my brother from another mother. I am only saddened that I won't get to see you this weekend due to my own issues you know, things going on in real life. But I'll be cheering him on the TV, and I'm sure you'll hear me from Pittsburgh. And hopefully there will not be a giant cloud of profanity hanging over the wherever I'm watching the game, because it's not actually on here.
Oh, it should be, right? Isn't it a Fox doubleheader, unless somebody else is on at the same time, right?
For no, you. Yes, the Eagles. Oh, local coverage here. So
fans eat horse crap. I mean, they don't need to watch them. They can entertain themselves in other ways.
I got to find myself a local establishment with Sunday ticket, which is fine. It isn't that hard. There's a fan group here, and I'll probably be hanging out with them. Watching the game.
Excellent. You know what? That's a perfect segue for me, too, because that's precisely what I did. I was in Columbus, Ohio last weekend for the Steelers game. I found an excellent Steelers bar for anyone who has interest in those sorts of things. The name is Gresso's. Tell Emilio, basically the guy who runs the place there, that Joe from Steel City Underground sent you if you ever make it there. Lots of good Steelers music. I mean, he even mutes out the commercials, which is great. So we'll have some music going in the background there. Great food. Even has their own beer that's brewed for them that has kind of their logo, kind of what do they call that? Like a mix or whatever with the Steelers logo, like kind of like with the stars and stuff. Like on the helmet with the colors. Very cool stuff. Very great place. I was highly impressed by them. So if you happen to ever be in that area, Columbus, Ohio, check out Gresso's. I mentioned I was going to give them a small shout out on the show. Nearly forgotten, Brian. So maybe you find a place just like I did. It was definitely, let me put it this way. There might have been like 50 TVs there, and guess how many of them that the Steelers were on? All of them. It really was a Steelers establishment. So it's always great to have Steelers Nation away from Pittsburgh sometimes. And I definitely felt at home there. It was a great experience. So thanks for joining me once again, folks. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. We are up, way up against it. So until next time, my name's Joe. His name's Brian. We encourage everyone to be safe, be good, and we will catch you later.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.